When the people that... No.
All right.
All right, let's get started. For real this time.
When the people that you know don't like you and your treasured friendships in, tune in to this podcast. We're your artificial friends.
That's all right.
Yeah. That's all right.
We're going to live with it. Okay. That's the one. Hey, Larry Morgan.
Hey there, Andy Chanley, is it?
Larry Morgan's with us, everybody.
Yeah. It's a twofer today.
And Sam Farmer and Josh Fligger, they're what you call on assignment.
Yes.
On assignment is what we say.
Yeah.
When they're not here.
Yeah.
When they're just not here.
That's a way of saying it.
Yeah. So.
Oh.
She's pretty hot.
Oh, is this Bananarama? Oh, no, this is
Shocking Blue.
Okay, I was going to say. There's a...
She's got a little gray slick.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, when she was younger.
I guess the story behind this song is that none of this band could speak a word of English.
Were they Swedish?
And,
or?
Yeah, it's one of those.
Or Icelandic or something?
No, I think we're Scandinavian, maybe.
Heidi.
But they...
That's all they could say was... All they could say is, Heidi,
yeah.
Heidi, Heidi.
So from what I know, if you listen carefully, they just learned this thing phonetically. Because it is very still. It's kind of like when you listen to a Scorpion song and you're like...
Oh, right.
Well, boy, he's having trouble getting his mouth around some of those
yeah.
very basic
you gonna,
words.
You're going to rotch me like a hurricane? Rotch you.
Yeah.
Rotch you like a hurricane. You know what I also like? What's his name? Jerry Rafferty. You know, he's mm-hmm. He's Scottish, yeah?
Yeah.
So the song Right Down the Line.
Mm-hmm. I love that song.
It's been you, woman, right down the line. A couple of lines in there. He says, changes that I've been true.
Yeah.
True. I've been true some changes.
You know, it's interesting. I thought about that. Even the Beatles back in the day when they first came to America, there's some press footage of one of those press conferences that
Maisel's brother
a reporter asking why they didn't sing with a British accent, which is a weird thing right. to ask. But if you think about it, you know, sometimes you listen to songs from people from other countries, you never know where they're from until you read a bio on them or something. There is, whether that's kind of a universal language. But then you get around to somebody like Billy Bragg. Who's like, she's got a new spell. It's right. like, oh, you are clearly not from this country.
Right.
Their accents do come through.
Who's the guy in Snow Patrol?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a long time. You can hear a couple of those things at the end of some of those phrases.
Right, right.
That's great. Like, we talk so pretty.
Us ugly Americans, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Larry, today... I wanted to share with you something and that I know that excites you.
Oh, boy.
It's not music related, although we'll get back to these one-hit wonders. I have a one-hit wonders of the 70s playlist.
Oh, this is
going
fantastic.
On YouTube.
All right.
The most exciting thing that happened to me in the last month.
Wow.
I bought a vise.
I'm sorry?
I bought a vise. A bench vise. A vise for my bench.
This says you, so much about
you. Clamp things down with. I got a vise.
This is, okay, you preface this by saying one of the most exciting things that's happened to you in months.
Yep. It's.
And then you followed it with the words, I bought a vise.
You know why?
Hmm.
Because this vise is a virtue.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. I regretted that before I said it. No, I'm not all
the. By the way, I bought a vice, the worst Matt Damon movie ever.
What?
I bought a zoo.
We bought a zoo. I get it. No, it was good.
No, it
wasn't.
No, it
was good.
No, go ahead. We can cut that out.
You cut it out.
We don't even have any beer today.
I know.
So
I can make you a martini.
Don't quit asking me because I'm going to say yes eventually.
Did you almost say queef asking me?
Queef asking me.
No, and queef asking.
Let's get that trending. Hashtag queef asking. Yeah, let me take a little sip of this. Anyway, so the interesting story you were telling me was, so you bought a vice, did you?
I sincerely hope this isn't your first one of our podcasts.
Why?
There's somebody tuning into this. I'll think we're raving lunatics.
You think this is some... Wait a minute. You and Josh drank bad beer, bitched about it for 20 minutes, left a big open space when you went to buy new beer.
I cut a lot of that out, though.
Well, I'm sure. And then put in a secret bask masking.
You're queef asking.
You put in a bunch of backward stuff.
It's a back masking. You're queef asking.
That I have yet to figure out what it actually says. So you have set a bar already for weirdness. True. So no. You bought a vice. Was that the end of the story, I hope?
No.
Are we going to talk about a vice for 20 minutes now?
Well, I think we could talk about it for 2 minutes.
I'm going to need a martini if we are.
I think we could talk for 2 minutes.
What's the brand of the vice?
It's a Wilton.
Mm-hmm.
Wilton vice.
Yeah.
I think all that crap's made in. I think all that stuff's made in China now, which sucks.
You clearly wouldn't have bought a vice unless you needed a vice.
I do need a vice
because you're not one to go off willy nilly, just buying luxurious items for the home without having a practical need for it.
No, I think everyone needs a vice. They just don't know
that they need a vice. Never ever once in my life have I ever said.
So many times when I'm doing work around the house, I wish that I had some way to hold a piece of wood to cut it.
Yeah.
Silas wants to work on a project, a little toy car.
And you need something to tie him down and keep him from messing with
something
stuff.
Something to clamp his hand in so he can just stay out of everything.
Very active child.
Yes. So I needed this.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it's not a fancy vice. It's a 4-inch vice. It was a $50 vice.
Oh, well. Excuse me, Mr. Rockefeller.
But I needed this vice for general projects around the house. But also, as I got this vice and drilled the holes and I bolted it to my workbench, I realized something.
Hmm.
My entire life, from the time I was like 6 years old until I left home and when I went back and visited, there was a vice on my dad's workbench. Where everything that was done was, wrenched down into that vise, and that's where so many things he fixed or made. And I specifically remember one of the first things he did. He took I wanted a knife. He collected knives, but I was 6 years old, 6 or 7, and he didn't want to give me a big buck knife. So he says, "You want a knife? Here, I'll make you a knife." He takes a little 5-pound sledge, just a little sledgehammer, and there's an anvil on the back of the vise. And he takes a 16-penny nail and takes it and flattens out the end of it. So there's like a egg-shaped flat part at the end of this nail.
Right.
And then takes that on the grinder and goes bzzz and sharpens that so that I have like this half-inch little blade. But I had my own knife. I have a distinct memory of him doing that for me. But I realized something that I didn't even expect beforehand at what a rite of passage that felt like to have something I feel like my father was around for that.
Yeah.
That's a passing of the torch,
now, okay.
A rite of passage, that sort of thing. And so I have no advice. I have not fixed anything. I have not used anything.
Uh-huh.
I clamped down a piece of wood real tight.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Just to stare at it for a while. Go,
yes.
That wood's not going anywhere.
Yes, that's what she said.
But you have an emotional...
They're queef asking.
Yeah. You have an emotional attachment to this vice because of the memories it brings back. And it potentially is something that you would like to pass along that experience to your son, perhaps, as you're doing repairs or things around the home, if they come up.
Yes.
Hmm?
I don't know if I trust him with even a half-inch knife. No.
Well, you don't have to make him a knife.
I was thinking about, could I do the same thing for him? I could, but I was the youngest in the house at that point. Mm-hmm. I was the last one, so the youngest child was me, and the next one was 6 years older than me. So it was safer to do it in our household than it would be for me, where I have a 3-year-old daughter
right.
running around.
Right.
And the idea of giving, you know, leaving a little, even a small knife like that laying around is probably not terribly wise.
Mm.
So I'll think about that. But
I'm trying to think if I have that same kind of situation with my dad, because I feel like there were times my dad didn't have a hobby per se. He was a car salesman, and he did love cars, and he was really into. Occasionally, he would bring home kind of these random classic cars, trying to convince my mom that he wanted to buy it and quote restore it. But he was nobody in this family has ever been handy enough to restore anything, even though. His dad was also a used car salesman, a small lot in Brownwood, Texas, and then he kind of grew up in the business, and he worked for Ford for years in West Texas. But I can remember my dad, I think of it now, and I think, oh, he was kind of trying to find something for us to bond over, but he wasn't that kind of guy. Not like he didn't want to bond with me, but, you know, it's like, he comes from a hunting family. You probably had hunters out in Indiana a little bit. I mean,
not a lot of it in my family. Yeah. You know, we'd go fishing every now and then.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad, I remember him going to a turkey shoot or two.
Yeah.
But as far as going out and having deer urine, you know, sprayed on your legs and doing that,
My grandfather and my father's side and a lot of his family and friends, they were deer hunters. They were quail hunters. They lived in an area where that was a very common thing. They didn't have to drive far to do it. They were very practical hunters. We ate everything they brought home, or they sold it or traded it with people.
Good.
So we were always having, I remember, quail dinners.
So it wasn't like Ted Nugent just, a crossbow through a 100 squirrels just to say you can do it. Ate everything that you could.
There was not a single mounted head in my grandfather's house. It wasn't like that. So I grew up with I don't know what was in the freezer.
Human or otherwise.
So I grew up around that, and I saw that they were respectful hunters as far as that goes. So whatever you want to say about guns and all that stuff. But it was never my thing, and it didn't seem to be my dad's thing. He took me bird hunting once. We were both incredibly unsuccessful. I fired off into a tree a couple of times and was just like, not sure I like this. And I don't think my dad ever wanted to admit it, but I don't think he liked it either, because we never went again. So I don't really have, can't think of, you know, something that my dad and I bonded over two things. And it's both of them were on television, and one was watching football on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was usually the Cowboys, and with the Super Bowl, as we record this, the big game hasn't happened yet, because the NFL is going to sue this podcast. Stand in line. We would watch football together and kind of be smart asses and make comments about stuff during it, which I loved. And we watched Hee-Haw together.
Oh my God, Hee-Haw!
My dad.
What was your town?
Odessa.
Say hello to Odessa, Texas. Population 10,402.
Salute.
Hee-haw!
Down. I'm a pickin'
and I'm a grinning.
I don't.
Left another and you was gone.
The dumbest show in the history of television, and we laughed.
Benny
so
Hill
hard.
For hillbillies.
Yeah, and
Benny
it was
hillbilly.
And my dad was a big country music fan, so Roy Clark, Buck Owens, the host, and they had every country star go on that thing.
They all showed up to hawk their music, the fresh music that was out. But make no mistake, those are some great players. Roy Clark was on there every week.
Right.
And Buck Owens.
Yeah.
I mean,
Buck
Owens.
Yeah. And when they played, my dad would take me. We saw Buck Owens live.
That's the Bakersfield sound. I mean, come on.
I know.
And different people like Roy Acuff and all the, Chet Atkins, all these people would come by.
That's probably the thing that my dad wanted to bond over with me the most, is get me, because I was a big Top 40 listener as a kid, and I resisted country music because in my mind it just wasn't the cool thing. And then he would make me go with him to see shows, and I would always enjoy myself and love what I saw. And I learned to have an appreciation, and I got to see, because of my dad, I got to see Merle Haggard live in the 70s. I got to see Buck Owens live in the 70s. He took me to a Jerry Jeff Walker show that hardly anybody showed up to the Ector County Coliseum for, and he played his heart out to a couple of thousand people. We saw Elvis.
Really?
Elvis came through Odessa, Texas, and he took me to see Elvis. I'll never forget.
When was that?
It was probably the last tour.
Did you know Elvis, maybe I've said this before, Elvis Presley, his last concert was in my hometown of Indianapolis in 1977.
Yeah.
June 1977. 2 months later, we take one of those family vacations where everybody gets in the car and, you know, goes for a drive.
Yeah.
We went down south. We were in Tupelo, Mississippi, his hometown.
Yeah.
The night he died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
So you've got some Elvis connection.
I might have caused it.
yeah, I saw that final tour. Yeah.
So he took you to indoctrinate you with all this. This is one of the things that you, those are the things that make you commune with him.
I think about that now, because when I see some of those older, as some of those guys die off, unfortunately, they become older. It's like he took me to a Johnny Cash show. You and I have talked about Johnny Cash many times. I saw him basically kind of in his 70s heyday when he had been on TV a lot, and you know, I got to see that show.
Yeah. And the Johnny Cash show was on in late 60s,
early 70s. Yeah, and he would still go on tour sometimes. So I think about that because I was such a little pissant little, pissant's not a word we're supposed to use these days. Thanks, Tom Brady. I was such a little pissant, you know, complainer about it. But I always end up having a really great time. Ronnie Millsap, one of the most rocking shows I've ever seen.
Seriously?
I mean, seriously. He played a version of Honky Tonk Woman as an encore at the end, and had, you know, here's the thing. Those guys are good musicians. Most of them were probably frustrated rock stars even then, and they were great players. Those Nashville players were great. Those studio musicians, and they'd take the touring band out. They were great. The Merle Haggard show I saw, there was a full band, like a brass section in that band. It was like this big band country sound almost.
Wow.
I'll never forget that. So, yeah, I did admit to him later on, yeah, it was really good.
You gave him the satisfaction of the time.
Yeah. So you had a vice, and I saw some shows with my dad.
I think you also have your vices. Artist.
No. LeBlanc and Carr.
No.
Oh. What am I thinking of? Oh, this is Randy Van Warmer.
Yes.
Shit.
Wow.
LeBlanc and Carr is... I'm falling. Yes, I'm falling.
Oh, that song sucks.
I'm fall. By the way, that's all the lyrics of the chorus. In love with you. And that's how it ends.
Yeah.
LeBlanc and Carr. And that also makes me think of another kind of slightly wimpy song that got hipped up a little bit by Beck. But the Corgis, Everybody's Gotta Learn Sometime. Everybody's Gotta Learn Sometime. Oh, you know that one? Beck covered it for the soundtrack to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and made it really hit.
I heard his version.
It's really good.
You know what?
You haven't played that on 88.5?
I haven't yet. By the way, I'm in hog heaven.
Oh, of course you are. I've been listening to you and just waiting for just like my mind to be blown by, oh my God, they're playing that. It's been great.
Yeah, it's just they're not afraid to play anything.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been really
a while since you've done that, right?
A long time. But that's what the sound started out as.
Yeah.
were there.
I know.
We were playing
27 Jennifers.
We were playing Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Ting Tings.
We
you
were
know?
Playing new Pretenders.
Yes.
We were playing. Yeah, I know. It was exciting.
It was a much different radio station.
David Gray. We did a live David
27
Gray
Jennifers.
And, I just said that. Where were you?
I was back at one of the previous Jennifers. Yeah. Who was that?
David Gray.
No, 27
Jennifers. Oh man, I knew you were gonna say that. It's that guy.
That guy. The guy that did the thing with the deal. Anyway, no, it's absolutely fantastic. What were we talking about right before that?
Just when I needed you most, Randy Van Warmer.
Oh, I remember. Know. You're talking about Beck. So, when Johnny Cash did those albums with Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin sits him down and says, play me every song that you love, every song that you'd like to record, every song that you've recorded before and want to do better, every song that you've never recorded, every song that you've written lately. Let's sit down with you and a guitar and a microphone, and let's just get them all down. And they record like 100 songs. And after he does that...
You're talking about pre-existing, basically covers, because that's what it ended
covers,
up being.
Largely covers, some new songs as well. But then Rick Rubin said, I've got a few songs I want to play for you. And plays him songs from Beck.
Yeah.
And
Nine Inch Nails.
And Danzig. And,
And
plays him these songs, and he's like, all right. Yeah. And he records most of them verbatim. He changes a word in the Nine Inch Nails song,
right,
Hurt.
Right.
Instead of, he didn't want to wear a crown of shit, so he wore a crown of thorns.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
But Trent Reznor didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah. Made it more poignant in a way.
Yeah, it really did. And more biblical.
Yeah.
But he took these songs and completely changed them. Songs like Soundgarden's Rusty Cage. He does Rusty Cage, and he does it with the help of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers as the band.
Mm-hmm.
They do their version of Rusty Cage is, I love the Soundgarden version. I was, you know, steeped in it. I mean, modern rock radio.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. But that version is more powerful.
Yeah.
And it's just raw and spare. And it would be interesting to me to have, I don't know how you would exactly do this and what exactly I'm going after here, but like Bob Dylan writes All Along the Watchtower, and Jimi Hendrix covers it and does it so inimitably.
Basically makes it a classic to the point where people identify that song with Jimmy, right?
And Bob Dylan had to start performing the song
like
Jimmy, or he didn't have to, but he did.
Right,
you know,
right,
kind of
right.
Stylized like that.
Yeah.
And realizing, oh, that's what this song that was in my head was supposed to be.
Interesting.
And so it would be interesting to me to hear Beck, who wrote Rowboat, mm-hmm. that Johnny Cash covered as Rowboat, to do Rowboat again in the style of Johnny Cash
doing his cover. Oh, interesting.
Bring it all back around. That's life imitating art, imitating life, imitating art.
I like hearing artists talk about songs. I mean, because my son, being a musician, he just got a gig playing an acoustic set with a lady friend of his, and they're going to be doing kind of spare stuff. They have to fill out like a two hour set. They've got a regular almost a residency at this little club in New York, mm-hmm. which is great, and it's a way for them to expose their original stuff.
Sure.
But they got a handful of songs. They ain't got 2 hours. So
you probably don't want to. I mean, even
you don't want to sit there and just try and force your new stuff on.
Exactly.
People.
Even Paul McCartney's not going to go out and only sing his songs for 2 hours. He's going to work in a George Harrison song
So it's really interesting to listen to them kind of curate. Well, we have to build a 2 hour set of music from other people and how they get together. They're going to do things like Nickel Creek and things like that, where there's a nice blend of male female voices. But it's poor kid. I mean, of all the things to hear, him say, anytime he plays live, he's thinking about, should I play a cool cover? And me being a music lover, I'm always offering way more suggestions than he wants to hear. But I love it when musicians. I heard Dave Grohl once talked to Marc Maron about how Foo Fighters, he really wanted to one day cover, and I don't think he's done this, and I think he should, But it's just, it's the most random thing for him to say. But he wanted to actually release a Foo Fighters cover and basically duplicate the A and B side of a 45 that he loves. Side A, Lonely Boy by Andrew Gold.
Andrew Gold.
And the flip side is Never Gonna, what is it? What was it? Never Gonna. It's a, just a kind of a goofy little pop ballad. And he was sitting, and it was like, I can't hear in my head how Foo Fighters would cover these songs. Never Let Her Slip Away, I think, was the B-side. And he wanted to release literally the same A and B-side of covers of an Andrew Gold song.
That's
which
awesome.
I would love to hear Foo Fighters do Lonely Boy.
Yeah. Oh, right? What a lonely boy.
Right?
Oh, what a lonely boy.
So, Grohl, if you're listening, man.
You know what song, I said this on the sound back in the day, and I told John Lodge, when he was in the studio, this. Mm-hmm. I said, you're going to see him in Glastonbury in a couple months. Tell him to do this. He's like, oh, that'd be great. Imagine the Foo Fighters covering this Moody Blues song. Oh. Such a bad recording.
The least Moody Blues sounding song Moody Blues ever did. Boy, that is terrible. Quality, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Imagine them doing that. I think that'd be a hit today.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good.
I love that song.
So good.
Love that song.
I'm going to suggest it to him.
Okay.
I'm going to run into him out there one day, I'm sure, and I'm going to say, here's what you need to do.
All right.
I want your work completed and turned in by Monday.
Yes. Please send me a recording at your earliest convenience. Thank you for approval. Oh, we've officially hit a lull.
A lull?
Yeah.
Well, no, I thought you were just taking a drink.
Well, I took a sip.
I'm going to take a sip.
And you cleared your throat.
I talked about my vice.
We've broken every possible rule of podcasting. We've made smacky, lippy noises.
And we haven't bothered to have a topic.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
There's a topic, and the topic is my father's vice.
Yeah.
And it's not just that, though. The music is always going to be in the background.
Yeah.
Music and beer are in the background at all times.
Well, we talked about
our minds,
traditions, our fathers, you know, kind of bonded with us on.
I didn't use my vice to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I also replaced a light switch in my living room.
Okay.
I had a light switch, a two gang, they call it. You know, it's two light switches on one thing,
been
one
there.
Up, and one up and one down, two
yeah.
gang.
Yeah.
And queef ask.
I don't want to tell you about my two gang. Queef asking me about it. All right.
So I wanted to replace it. One of the switches controlled the porch light.
Uh-huh.
And the other controlled the outlet on the other side of the living room that the all the lights in the place were turned. There's a pole light that is plugged into that.
Mm-hmm.
So you could turn on the lights in the living room from the other switch. It was an ugly, nasty yellow switch from centuries ago. I wanted to replace it. And in doing so, I thought, I'm going to replace this with a Wi-Fi enabled light switch.
Oh.
One so I could pick up my phone, or not even pick up my phone. I could stand near it and say, hey, Siri, turn on the living room lights. And the living room lights would come on.
Were you going to say it with that little, I wish people could have seen your, oh, Siri is trying to turn on your lights right now.
I can't find anything connected in your home right now. Yeah. So.
Well, you said it with such a kind of little haughty kind of, like move to a little jerk to your head.
Siri,
like,
this is Richard Springthorpe, and I want my living room lights turned on.
Lights on. Oh, no, that would be a clapper. Sorry. Which, by the way, you could just get the damn clapper.
I could get a clapper. Mm-hmm. I could do that. But I listened to way too much John Mellencamp music for that to be.
All It's just lights going on and off all day.
Yeah.
Wild night. Yeah,
it looks like it.
Keeps going.
I'm at a rave. I've always made the observation, if you there are certain applications the clapper is no good for if you're on an iron lung. If you a heart defibrillator, those kinds of things, not good for that.
Yeah, if you hold small talent shows in your living room and it's just like it's constant applause. And it's, like,
not, it's not a good thing.
Flicker, flicker.
I thought it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to have that power, to wield the power,
yeah.
To be able to turn my lights right. on. And you can rig it so you can do it remotely.
Right.
I could be in Brussels, Belgium, and say, I want my lights on in my living room. And they would turn on, and I could, I think, have an extra measure of peace of mind.
Of security, and that you would, you know, foil any burglary attempts.
Yes.
Yes. If you also could hook it up to your train track set so that your Michael Jordan cardboard cutout could go send a shadow across the curtains.
Like Home Alone?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for making up. Thank you. So, I can't wait to get to the end of this scintillating light switch story, Andy. How'd it go?
Not well.
Okay.
This is not ready for prime time. I'm here to tell you. The product that I got would not pair with my Wi-Fi. I'm thoroughly disappointed,
huh.
And I've got to start over with it. But I was going to ask you, is that something, this is the essence of me. I love to tinker.
Yeah.
I love my vice,
yeah.
Now that I can tinker with more things.
Yeah.
But you're none of this.
Oh,
this,
I don't, no, 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 no. I mean, I'm barely awake right now listening to you talk about these things. I mean, I envy you to a certain extent because I am so not handy at all. And the things that you talk about that you do around the house that seem kind of basic and simple to you, I think I've told this in a previous episode, I have attempted to hang basic custom blinds in a window a couple of different times, and I end up, like, there's 19 holes drilled, and just, you know, I never measure right, and I don't have patience. I think the meticulous nature of the exactitude of those sorts of things, I do not have the acumen or patience to make them work properly.
You don't think it's intelligence-based?
No, I think actually mostly intelligence. I don't want to insult anybody here. No, because I think a gorilla could be taught to do that stuff, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Hey, look at
what I said. No, I said I envy that. I think that is a skill I wish I had more innate ability to do. I'm not good at it. I'm not good at that at all. Why?
How does this keep coming up in my feed?
Why are we cursed?
Any song that has Gitchy Goomy in it,
yeah,
can go screw itself.
That's what gets you about the song?
Gitchy Goomy.
Late Gitchy Goomy?
Gitchy Goomy.
That's the thing,
yeah,
that gets you. All right. It's not the length of the song, the droning, just nonstop, few chord changes. No, of the downbeat story of death and drowning.
The unrelenting droning of. No, that's not it. Let's get you, Goomy.
All right.
It
gets, you know, he's Canadian. It gets so cold and dark up there so much of the
time. It's like whenever someone says, do I sound like a fuddy-duddy? Yes, by saying the word fuddy-duddy, you sound like a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, they pretty much proved your own point.
Now, I want, when in my old age, I want to be a rocking chair maker.
What?
Did I not share this with you before? That's why this is such a watershed thing that I think you're dismissing, because you think, oh, he's doing the tool time grunt, and this is just something
I've never thought of you as that guy, because you don't, like, collect power tools and have a giant wall of every tool imaginable. I mean...
Will you come look at my pliers?
No.
Come look at my pliers.
I don't want to look at your pliers.
I think I have, like, 12 to 15 pair of pliers.
Well, that's just dumb.
And maybe 10 wire snips.
Do they all have names?
Yes. This one's Snippy. This one's Snappy.
This is Little Snippy and Big Snippy. Here's Cutty Boy.
Oh. I think you're laughing down your nose at me. I want to make rocking chairs when I retire.
Now that is a craft well beyond anything you've ever described. I mean, that is something that's going to take years, right? I mean,
it's well beyond anything I've done. Yeah. I have never made a rocking chair.
How would you even begin? Don't you need to apprentice with a grand rocking chair maker?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that
I'm sure there
I
are plans or whatever.
Intuitively mm-hmm. come up with something that would be beautiful and comfortable, and that people would pay a couple $1,000s.
So you want to literally design it from scratch. You
from
don't want to use like a kit to start or whatever. If that
go
even
to
exists.
Unfinished oak in Amish country and get a couple of dozen kits. No, I want to make it from nothing.
That is an ambitious and I think admirable goal. And I'm not saying that you don't have it in you to do that, because I think you, when you decide to do something, Andy, you're very driven to do it. But that's hard. That's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're going to need like saws and things and sanders, and you're going to need
I'll need more space than this. Yeah. I'll need joiners and I'll need sanders.
Yeah.
I'll need, big workbench space to glue things together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll need all that.
You know what kind of wood you make them out of?
You know what? I just don't know. I was thinking maybe poplar.
I'm sorry. you had that answer so handy. I don't know what. I can't even deal with this right now. I can't process.
It's a beautiful wood. It has wonderful grain.
I believe you.
I think it would be very attractive.
I hear that it's incredibly poplar in the wood community.
You're going to own that one, aren't you?
We're going to cut that out, too. Well, I can't wait to see your first rocking chair. I know it's going to be some time away, and perhaps I will be well past my prime and hopefully still somewhat conscious so I can see it.
You make me crave alcohol.
What? What did I do? I've been nothing but supportive of your goofy damn vice. And
what have you bought lately? What have you done to, as an exploit outside of radio?
Mm-hmm.
What have you done lately that you would call creative and or constructive? What are there any things that you've done?
I have actually been in many ways revitalized by being invited to this podcast to relaunch mine. Snark Monkey, which had a really good run for about 2 years, kind of went on an indefinite hiatus when I kind of exhausted my energy for doing everything. And to get people together, to book it, to produce it.
Pain in the cock.
It is meant to be a passion project at first, because there's no return on it other than just being able to express yourself.
Yeah. But I can safely tell you I've made no money on this.
No, of course not.
And I've invested hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah, and you usually don't get anything back until you really kind of get some sort of traction, and that takes a whole different kind of effort. So I kind of exhausted myself from the standpoint of, for what I was doing, I got some big names. I got director Paul Feig, and I got some great comedians on. I got some people, other people. Phil Hendry came and talked for me. I mean, I really had some great, interesting conversations, but I just kind of reached that wall of, I'm tired of trying to make this happen every week. But I have been revitalized to come at it from a different angle. Hmm. I've been kind of perfecting the equipment that I use to be more mobile and kind of try to decide how I can, if I were to just kind of pick up and go, to be able to get in front of somebody who wanted to do something from their home, would I have the ability to do that? So I've been kind of assembling that, and it's not as visceral or as concrete as something as attaching a vice to my workbench. But wow. I've been gathering new equipment, and I've been building the process of having something outside of my work life that is something I can feel really passionate about.
Well, so, how about that?
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. And thanks to you, because it's reminded me how fun this can be. I especially enjoy doing your podcast because I have to do very little work.
It shows.
All falls on you.
Yeah.
I mean,
people notice.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Because, see, the thing is, when I'm just a guest, I elevate it because I make it entertaining. So that's my heavy lifting. I'm just going to take a drink now.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine, director, he said he whenever he goes in to meet with someone, mm-hmm. with producers, studio heads,
right.
and they offer him some water,
yeah.
a bottle of water, would you care for a bottle of water? He always says yes. You know why? It's because when they ask him a question he doesn't have the answer to, he'll do this. So, that's a good question.
Buys him a little bit of time.
That's a good question. And what I would say is,
tip.
You know, it's like it gives you 20 seconds. Yeah. Don't want to say that. Oh, no, don't want to say that. I want to say that. Oh, end this. Okay, and then you can launch into it. That's a great way to do it.
That's really good.
I think we ought to do that more often in this podcast.
Just stop and take drink. Well, you really think so?
Maybe not.
Okay.
Probably not.
Maybe we should. Maybe your point is we should take more time to think about what we're going to say before we just blurt crap out.
Absolutely. It shouldn't take you any time at all.
Oh, this is Exile. Kiss you all over,
it
man.
Sure is.
Right
baby.
There on top of that one. Exile, who had two distinct careers as a country band.
Right.
And as this kind of disco-y pop band.
Yacht Rock.
Yeah, this one. Oh, yeah.
His hair was great.
Yeah, you look at this is one of those a bunch of guys in sexy poses album covers that's just really uncomfortable to look at. And like, they probably shouldn't have done that. They're all wearing those silky, satiny shirts.
Oh, God. I showed
the V's, you know, unbuttoned down to the hairy navels.
I showed Dr. Hook's When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman video
right.
to Josh.
Right.
He pissed himself. It was fantastic.
Well,
the guy's he's got a cowboy hat, maracas, a vest, and bell bottoms. It is pretty spectacular.
Dr. Hook reminds me because I for some reason I mentioned this, maybe it was some copy I read or something, but saying the list of hits. Oh, it was I am the voice that does the extras for Casey Kasem's American Top 40 flashback shows.
Oh.
They're replaying across the country.
Right.
Stations will play full Casey Top 40 shows from a specific year. And I'm kind of the interstitial filler, you know, extra of songs from that year. And I introduced a song by Dr. Hook and kind of listed off some of the hits they had over the past. And as I said the words, she was only 16. Was that the song? Yeah.
Sam Cooke?
No.
She was
Dr.
only
Hook.
16.
Yeah, yeah.
Only 16.
I was like, oh, wow. Those songs do come up every once in a while now. And they just did a sketch on SNL last weekend with Will Ferrell as the host where they did one of those Time Life, you know, collection offers of great songs from the past. And it's Will Ferrell doing almost like a combo Chuck Berry kind of old Tutti Frutti.
Little Richard.
Little Richard style guy at a piano. But every song, you know, he's singing goofy 50s style pop songs. But one of the titles is one of the titles is something about and she was only 15. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But every time they go back to and then they cut to Kate McKinnon as one of the hosts and she's looking like, that seems inappropriate. You know, just that weird
right.
look. But every time they go back to one of the clips, the girl in the song gets younger and younger.
Yeah.
And she was 14, baby, 14. and then they cut back and Kate McKinnon's like, yeah, that doesn't seem appropriate, does it? And they just keep moving. There are so many pop songs. Like Gary Puckett, Young Girl.
Young Girl, you're breaking my heart.
No, Get Out of My Mind.
Oh, Get Out of My Mind. You're much too young, girl.
No, the lyric is, you better run, girl. You're much too young, girl.
No!
No! Oh, please, nobody ever play that ever again.
What was the one you guys were talking about, you and Sam, a week or so ago?
Like that?
Yeah, the lyric that was really ungood.
Oh boy, I don't remember.
I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
I remember. You remember when Casey Kasem, who I love, by the way,
yeah.
When he was not well,
mm-hmm.
and Gene took him Gene to Norway.
Kasem. Yeah,
is
yeah,
that right?
I think that's
went
right.
To Norway.
Yeah.
And as that all was unfolding, I was doing the news in the morning at the time
right.
with Uncle Joe, and I read a story about. I was able to find from a snippet from an old long distance dedication. A little thing of Casey, and that's just something about, you know, he's passed away, and his remains are currently unaccounted for. He said, "I'm on tour in Norway, and I'll be back in the States when I can." it's just too good.
Okay.
This is the here it is. Oh, you're going alone.
Yeah. Oh, this is live, Doctor.
Oh, yeah. It's from the Midnight Special. He's wearing an eye patch, two pairs of maracas, a leather vest, a t-shirt or a shirt that's unbuttoned down to his belly button, and a cowboy hat. It's amazing. And, and bell bottoms and a big belt buckle.
Wow.
Dr. Hook was great.
Yeah.
Love Dr.
Yeah.
Larry? What's on your mind? What's going on this weekend?
Gonna be doing a little relaxing. Gonna follow up on what I was just talking about and start to formulate how I relaunch my podcast.
Was I ever invited to do your podcast?
Yeah, I think you were. As a matter of fact, you were never able to. There were a couple of. I have done some group ones where I have people come in and talk about Star Wars movies or other group stuff like that, and. You have not been available, usually, when I've asked.
I see.
But I'm going to have you back, man. In fact, I'm asking you right now. Since you've seen a lot of the Oscar-nominated films,
oh, yes?
I want to do a pre-Oscar show and get some predictions and get some people in there to talk about movies they loved and maybe ones that weren't nominated that we should be thinking about.
All right.
All right.
When's that going to be?
I don't know.
When are the Oscars?
I don't know.
2 weeks?
That's,
are they the week after the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think they're
the big game.
I think they're much later in February for
are
some
they?
Reason. Yeah. No. Yeah, they're a ways off.
All right.
And I'll watch the Super Bowl this weekend for the commercials because I'm one of those people.
God, I hope the Patriots lose.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It'd be fantastic, and in a spectacular way.
Yeah.
One, I want to see a little tear coming down Bill Belichick's face.
Yeah. And Tom Brady suddenly look like he's 86 years old and just all haggard and dried
I want
up.
Them to cry in each other's bosom.
Yes. And then we will have the excitement of watching Philadelphia burn to the fucking ground.
Yay!
It's a win-win!
A friend of mine was saying that he went to, he's in Boston, and he went into a bar, has known this bouncer for years and years, and goes in there and sees this guy this last week, and he's wearing a Philadelphia t-shirt. Guy ghosts him, won't even talk to him.
Seriously?
Yeah, wouldn't even recognize his existence.
By the way, I love the people of Philadelphia and wish you absolutely no harm. So, just want to make that clear. So queef asking me.
They'll kill you.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
I know.
Wit or we're out.
Of course, it's easy to get away from somebody from Philadelphia because they just start having a heart attack if they try and run after you.
Larry, it's been great to have you
hey,
over.
Hey, thanks for having me over here.
Was there anything else you wanted to cover?
Not at all.
I'm trying to think if there was... Hold on.
You know what? You know, there was one thing, Andy.
I'm glad you asked that. I'm glad you asked that question. Queef asking.
When the people that you know don't like you and your treasured friendships end, tune into this podcast. We're your artificial friends.
Hey, no bullshit. That was the best one. Yeah, I think so.